This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. Hurricane Melissa getting ready to pummel Jamaica as a Category 5 storm. It's expected to be the strongest ever to hit the island directly. Toby Lindley-Smith is a British tourist who can't leave.
People are sort of staying calm, but obviously there's an undercurrent of panic. We, as Brits, aren't really used to this kind of thing. We're all a bit nervous, but the hotel is doing everything they can.
The storm is packing 175-mile-an-hour winds and is expected to make landfall sometime today. About 42 million Americans are poised to lose their food assistance benefits this weekend because of the government shutdown. Food pantries are popping up at airports for struggling federal workers who are still on the job, despite not getting paid. This is day 28 of the shutdown. 18 innings is what it took for the L.A. Dodgers to finally take care of the Toronto Blue Jays in the World Series, the marathon lasting 6 hours and 39 minutes, ending when Freddie Freeman homered at the bottom of the 18th. This is ABC News.
You're listening to 107.7 WRCE, home for the Todd Allball Show, weekday afternoons from 2 to 4.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Lots to report from the weekend box office, including a new champ from the world of anime. Chainsaw Man the Movie came in first place with $17 million at the gate. The animated film tells the story of a man who was almost killed by the Yakuza until he was saved by his dog, forcing them to become one, thereby creating Chainsaw Man. The film received a 96% fresh rating on Rotten Tomatoes and 99% audience score. Coming in second place in its second week of release was last week's champ, Black Phone 2, which pulled in $13 million at the box office. Despite bad reviews, newcomer Regretting You pulled in 12.5 mil, which was good for third place for the drama. Springsteen Deliver Me From Nowhere finished in fourth place in its opening weekend with $9 million, which was a bit below expectations. And it was Tron Eris in its second week that pulled in just under $5 million, which was good for fifth place at the gate. If you get a chance, see a movie called Truth or Treason. Really solid film. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
It's the Bucks and the Knicks. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with Sports NBA. The Bucks host the New York Knicks. Milwaukee coming off a disappointing loss in Cleveland, 118-113 to fall to 2-1. Bucks center Miles Turner.
Being new to this group, my key messaging to everybody was like, you got to look forward, to playing from behind. It's the NBA. Stuff's gonna happen. At times you can find yourself in unfortunate positions, but I just think it's very important that, if we want to be, a playoff caliber team or a championship caliber team, we gotta, really embrace, being down. And I think we did a good job of that in that third quarter. And there's no excuses in this league. It doesn't matter who's out there. We all lace them up and try to go out there and compete.
Baseball, Game 4 of the World Series tonight in Los Angeles. The Dodgers leading the series 2-1 over the Blue Jays after winning last night 6-5. The game went past midnight. The Dodgers' Freddie Freeman with a walk-off home run in the bottom of the 18th inning to win the game with Sports on Mike Clemens.
The Dunks.
Driving down the lane to the rim, and he rips it down with a right hand.
The Dagger.
Got it! Count it! And a foul! John Blackwell is feeling it.
The exclamation point.
Jack on the run down the lane to the rim, and he sends it down.
This is your radio home for Wisconsin Badger basketball.
Good again! And that's 100 for the Wisconsin Badgers.
The Badger Sports Network from Learfield.
Winter for three straight on straight in.
Todd Allbaugh.
Hey, everybody. If you're like me, you're an analog person living in a digital age. Join us next time. We'll talk about what skills will keep you employed in the age of AI and data centers. Join us.
The Todd Allbaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
107.7 WRCE, news from the center and home for the Todd Allbaugh Show, Monday through Friday from 2 to 4.
It is going to be mostly cloudy today. Our high right around 59 this afternoon with wind out of the east at around 5 to 15. Tonight, scattered showers likely. Our low in the upper 30s to low 40s. Tomorrow will be mostly sunny with a high of 57. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Current temp now 37.
When it comes to vaping, the truth can get clouded. So let's make it clear. Vaping is not safe for youth.
Because vaping can put microscopic particles into your lungs.
And dangerous things like metals into your body.
And nicotine, which can harm a person's brain development through their mid-20s.
With appealing flavors, high nicotine levels, and lots of promotion on social media.
Many kids think vaping is harmless, but it's not. So talk to your kids about the risks of vaping.
Because when you talk, they hear you.
Learn more at underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
Maggie Dawn.
At 5 o'clock, I talk with Chicago attorney Robert Held, who is among the protesters who were detained for protesting outside the ICE facility in Broadview. We discuss his 8 hours in custody.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
Let's start off with a little good news on your Tuesday morning. Welcome in, everybody. It's the fabulous Farm Babe Pam Yonke. This is the Midwest Farm Report. Tomorrow, the National FFA Convention officially gets underway in Indianapolis, Indiana. This morning, we know that the Wisconsin candidate that would like to become a part of the National FFA officer team is advancing to the next round of interviews. That's one of the tidbits we've got for you this morning. Our own Jill Welke is on the scene in Indianapolis, keeping us up to date on all things Wisconsin FFA. Boy, that's going to be a whopper convention this year in Indianapolis, Indiana. They're estimating somewhere around 70,000 FFA members from the United States, as well as Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands, are going to be attending. That is a lot of bodies, a lot of young bodies. So we're going to kind of keep an eye on that as the convention unfolds this week. Keeping an eye on the weather and what's unfolding for us today. Not a lot really to be concerned about. Clouds, that's the thing that's going to be most noticeable. Mostly cloudy skies today, 57 are expected high. Sunshine returns tomorrow, 55. Thursday, sunshine and 53. Friday, partly sunny and 52. Stu Muck will paint us a statewide weather forecast in about 15 minutes. Heavy emphasis this morning on immigration reform. There's a new national coalition that's been formed by farmers called Grow It Here, and it's designed to draw attention to how desperate agriculture is for foreign-born workers. One of our Wisconsin dairy operators is part of the Grow It Here movement. His name, John Rosenau. He's a dairy farmer in the Wamandi Valley outside of Cochrane, Fountain City. We're going to hear what he has to say about that. And up next, a dairy group right here in Wisconsin trying to be one of the leading voices when it comes to immigration reform. The H-2A program that's currently in place does not apply for dairy. Stephanie Hoff's going to tell us more details on what we're hoping will be reformed about immigration. That's on the way.
Everything you've heard is true. Pioneer brand Z-Series soybeans are bringing you the next era of soybean performance. Believe the hype. With a generational leap in genetics, Z-Series is redefining what's possible. Ride the wave. Z-Series soybeans have unleashed unprecedented yield potential and delivered maximum return on investment. Plant Z-Series soybeans in the 100th season of Pioneer. Visit pioneer.com/greatest yields.
With all of the buzz around immigration policy in Washington, D.C., there's an opportunity for the government to also address the agricultural workforce shortage. I'm Stephanie Hoff from the southern end of the world's longest barn in Madison. And what we're hearing across all sectors of agriculture is that having a reliable workforce remains a number one challenge today. Karen Geffert joins us. She's the chief policy officer for Edge Dairy Farmer Cooperative and Voice of Milk. She says workforce is an issue their organization is deeply engaged in.
The rural workforce labor issue is a huge issue. Anytime I talk to dairy farmers, what we hear is labor. They need a reliable, safe workforce. And that's something that we from the dairy industry have been advocating for 40 years. The current labor force, immigration, visa system just doesn't work for dairy. And what we're hearing is our dairy farmers need an entry-level workforce. The only program that really exists that can address that is the H-2A program. And unfortunately, dairy is specifically prohibited from using that program, and it's seasonal. So as we know, dairy farmers need 365 days a year, a labor force that can milk those cows. And so a seasonal labor force does not work. So one of the things that we've been advocating for is changes to the H-2A program. That's not a new idea. That's an idea that's been around for a long time. But last session in Congress, the House Agriculture Committee created an Ag Labor Working Group. And so they are not the committee of jurisdiction when it comes to labor. But agriculture and dairy specifically are unique in the labor conversation. And there's a lot of folks who really don't understand the needs of ag labor. And so that working group was really important to come together and write out all of the things that agriculture needs from a labor standpoint that can then be conveyed to other members of Congress. And so in that working report, there were 15 provisions that were unanimously approved by that working group as items that should move forward for consideration for an overall comprehensive ag labor package, if you would. One of those was changes to the H-2A program to make it accessible for dairy and to make that year-round and not just seasonal in nature. So we think that's a really good start. The House Agriculture Committee has been looking at writing legislation on that. With the current government shutdown and just the focus being on continued funding of the government, you know, that just hasn't come to fruition yet. And we don't think that maybe that's the only path we should take. We think perhaps we could take a parallel track and really look at a dairy-specific immigration program, visa program, that would be year-round for that entry-level workforce. Because we can try two different things at the same time. I mean, what's the worst that can happen, that we get both of them to succeed? That sounds like a great problem to have.
I want to talk more about that, but first I just want you to provide some, maybe it's statistics, maybe it's anecdotal feedback of just how bad is the problem.
I don't think I've talked to a dairy farmer who has a full workforce. And we have farmers that talk about, they have workers on their farm that have been there for 20, 25 years, 15 years. These are great paying jobs. These are stable jobs. These are jobs where family comes in and they integrate themselves in the community. But unfortunately, we just don't have enough. We don't have a domestic workforce that wants to do these jobs. So our dairy farmers are faced at looking at a foreign-born workforce to come in and do these jobs. So we have a tremendous number of farms that are always looking for more people just because there just isn't the domestic interest there.
Karen, now I want to follow up on some of the solutions that you told us about, including flexibility for visas, length and duration of visa programs, and maybe even what you can do with the visa, what type of farm work you can do. When it comes to making that argument in Congress, how do you approach the topics of criminal background or accountability for these workers?
Right. So we have farmers that have had the labor force on their farm for 20, 25 years. Our farmers know that the workforce that they have are good people. You know, nobody gets behind the idea of having criminals and bad people in the country. And I think we can all rally behind the fact that we want those folks to be deported. We want them to leave. And so when we look at a system for a solution for dairy farmers, it has to be affordable, it has to be reliable, and it has to go through all of the checks and balances, background checks, to make sure we're bringing in safe people. And then we have to make sure that there's follow-up on that. So there, you know, what does that look like? Perhaps our farmers need to be conscientious of who they have in the country and what it is they're doing. And if we have some folks that go outside the lines, that's just not an acceptable thing. And I think if that's what it takes to get an immigration system that is effective, reliable, and cost-effective and streamlined, that I think we're all in.
Well, the industry as a whole has been working on this for about four decades and longer. Are you optimistic that now is the time for change, or is this still just this back and forth struggle?
Labor and immigration have been probably the worst kept secret, and we've been asking for a solution in Congress for 40 years, and it's been really disappointing that hasn't happened. There are a lot of political dynamics of why that hasn't happened. It could be partisan. It can be that ag gets kind of lost in the comprehensive labor conversation. But ultimately, I think right now we have a unique situation. We have an administration who has really shown the spotlight on the issue with border security and the fact that we have folks who are foreign-born, who are undocumented here in the country. They see those all equally if they're not here in a legal standpoint. But we think we have the opportunity, and we're starting to see dairy groups and agriculture groups kind of pop their head up and say, hey, but these are the folks we need, and we haven't had a solution for 40 years, so how did you expect us to grow? And so let's figure out a pathway forward for both domestic or workforce that's here, as well as the fact that we're going to need a future workforce and they're going to have to be foreign born. So let's come up with a solution that is streamlined, reliable, cost effective, and provides us that safety and security that we know we want and we need from that foreign born workforce coming in.
That wraps up our latest conversation on the agricultural workforce, a challenge that continues to ripple across every corner of the industry from dairy barns to vegetable fields. As debates around immigration policy heat up in Washington, there is growing hope that lawmakers will recognize this as an opportunity to address the workers who keep agriculture running. Karen Geffert telling the story today. She's the chief policy officer with Edge Dairy Farmer Cooperative and Voice of Milk. As we heard, the industry is deeply engaged in finding solutions that make sense for both farmers and their employees. Maybe now is the time to finally end that 40-year battle and bring those solutions to fruition. From the southern end of the world's longest barn in Madison, I'm Stephanie Hoff.
What weather is in store for the Midwest today? Stay tuned as Ag Meteorologist Stu Muck gives you the latest forecast in just moments, right here on the Midwest Farm Report.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
Drivers, Austin Cinder here. As a NASCAR Cup Series driver of the number 2 Discount Tire Ford Mustang, there's a few rules of the road I like to tell my family and friends. Tire pressure is critical to safety because underinflated tires are more likely to fail. Plus, properly inflated tires will give you better gas mileage. Make sure to check your tire pressure at least once a month or stop by a local tire retailer for an air check.
A message from the U.S. Tire Manufacturers Association.
This is Robert Pilot, host of Native Roots Radio. On our show, we talk about Native issues like treaties, protecting Mother Earth, and holding our elected officials accountable. You'll also hear from Turtle Island voices like Arvina Martin, State Representative Heather Keeler, Ruth Anna Buffalo, Dr. Anthony Stately, State Senator Mary Kunish, Robert Lilligren, and Bob Blake. Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
Native Roots Radio, weeknights at 8 on your local Civic Media radio station.
The Todd Allbaugh Show.
Brady Ewing, 2-time Big Ten champion with Wisconsin football.
To hear that the coaches aren't fostering those relationships at the high schools, that has been the heartbeat of the team before Fickell's time. I got recruited other places, but I chose to be a Wisconsin Badger because of what that meant to me. If it means something to you, not just the name on the back, but the name you have on the front of your jersey, that's going to have staying power in today's college athletic landscape.
The Todd Allbaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station. And on the app.
This weekend, we all fall back. Daylight saving time ends and we turn our clocks back 1 hour. It's also a good time to check your smoke detectors and replace those batteries. Stay safe, stay on time. A message from your local Civic Media radio station. Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
News from the Center, WRCE. Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, childcare remains a big issue in Wisconsin, around the country. Corrine Hendrickson will join us in hour number 2. Don't miss it.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11. This is News from the Center, WRCE.
Troy is now a national FFA candidate. She made it through the first phase of interviews that happened yesterday. More interviews on the way today, and we'll see how things advance. So the National FFA 98th Annual National FFA Convention getting underway tomorrow officially in Indianapolis, Indiana. This is the time of the year when our FFA groups get active, winter activities being planned. You've got an activity, too, that's all about supporting the FFA.
Yeah, the FFA alumni, the Wisconsin Association of FFA Alumni and Supporters, having an online auction. It ends this Sunday at auctionsbyobrien.com. Couple of highlights. How about a family pack of tickets to the Farm Wisconsin Discovery Center, 40 pounds of Lynn's Dairy Colby cheese, a set of concaves from Condex for your rotary combine, 6 bags of ranked seed. There's a TV. Man, there is more stuff at this website. It's auctionsbyobrien.com, and look for the Wisconsin FFA Alumni Fall Auction. There's goodies.
Yeah, that's excellent. And like we said, always want to be a supporter of the Blue and Gold. They're expecting 70,000 members to attend. Do you remember what it was like? Well, when we were kind of involved, it was back in Kansas City, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was Kansas City, but it's like we owned the town.
Yeah, and there was nothing near 70,000 back then.
No, not at all.
Well, if they're walking around in Indianapolis this week, I'm going to guess that they are going to have fairly moderate temperatures to be in the official dress of blue and gold and black.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're going to feel a little warm, no doubt about that. And that's not all bad either. Around here, we're going to start to cool down a little more. We still have to talk about that cool front. It's out to the west of Minnesota, a weak low pressure system out of the north trying to bring that our way. There are scattered showers right along that western edge of Minnesota, very scattered rain in central Minnesota from north to south and down into western Iowa. What's going to happen with this system is we're going to spin up a larger low down in Missouri that's going to head a little further southeast as we wrap up today and head into Wednesday. That's going to kind of allow that cool front to our west to just dissipate. So never really hold together and build right into Wisconsin. Some shower chances in the far western part of the state late today or tonight, and otherwise clouds elsewhere. But that system, then the focus changes further south, and we don't talk about a whole lot of rain threat. Temperatures, although not, you know, in the 70s or anything spectacular, are still going to be around normal and just gradually starting to cool toward the end of the week. Nothing serious. We're not dropping into the deep freeze or anything. Just cooling down a little bit. The wrap-up of the week, later Friday, a weak system may account for a little rain. I'd expect that again west and north, but that small chance around. And then just a little cooler as we get into the weekend. You know, we should be down in the lower 50s for normal highs. I'd expect even in the south, upper 40s. So a few degrees below normal with that next small rain possibility wrapping up the weekend, happening in towards Sunday and maybe on toward early part of next week, Monday. Not going to amount to much there, but that next small little chance. I'll have our forecast details right after this.
Hey, everybody, calm down. It's okay.
Oh, it's coming. The farm animals can always feel it.
Is that an earthquake? I didn't think those happened in the heartland. Aren't we harvesting Pioneer brand Z-Series soybeans today?
It's not an earthquake. It's the aftershock of unleashing Z-Series soybeans.
You did mention a yield advantage of nearly 4 bushels an acre.
Plant Z-Series soybeans in the 100th season of Pioneer. Visit pioneer.com/greatest yields.
At Channel, we always show up for our farmers.
Is that tar spot or rust?
Incoming!
Definitely rust.
Rick, how did you...
Dropping in to check on your crop, Bill. Let's call your agronomist before that rust can hurt your yield.
That sounds great, but when did you learn to skydive?
Self-taught, Bill. Kind of a prodigy.
From personalized insights to year-round support, Channel Seed Pros always show up. Visit channel.com to learn more. Channel, all in, all season. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Excellent message from Dan in Fort Atkinson this morning. He says this mild weather is doing all right by him. He's still got a hummingbird on his feeder. So hopefully that little rascal doesn't have to take shelter anytime soon.
Yeah, that'll be all right. I don't think we're going to have that really frosty weather to keep him cold. I will say this. I've talked to a few producers. Things not drying down as much as we'd like or as quickly as we'd like. Soybeans and corn specifically not really drying. Maybe a better frost would help that. But then again, a few days without rain. Maybe we can make that happen. Mostly cloudy today. That's our forecast. Some rain in the far west and northwest part of the state may pop up a little later today. I expect those temps in the mid to upper 50s today. East winds will be around 5 to 15. Clouds tonight, at least starting out, we cleared out a little more overnight, dropping into the 30s, maybe a low 40 in the south. East winds 5 to 15. Mostly sunny come Wednesday, and I'd again expect the very upper 40s to mid 50s. with the northeast winds 5 to 15. Thursday, some sunshine, maybe a slight rain chance further north late Thursday night. Thursday's high, low to mid 50s with the north winds at 5 to 10. And then, Pam, just gradually cooling a degree or two as we head to the weekend.
All right. That isn't too bad at all. Very good. Thanks, Stuart. And again, remind us about that auction website if we want to get in on the action.
Auctionsbyobrien.com. Auctionsbyobrien.com.
All one word, Auctions by O'Brien.
That's it.
B-R-I-E-N?
B-R-I-E-N.
All right. Good enough, buddy. We'll catch up with you tomorrow. Thanks.
All right. We'll see you.
Stu Mucker, ag meteorologist with the weather details you're looking for. Speaking of FFA, I do want to also let you know that the Wisconsin FFA Foundation is launching a new way for you to be involved. It's called Rooted in Giving Circle. From $5 on up, you can pledge to be a part of the Wisconsin FFA Foundation and the future of FFA. Just check out our website for more details. Well, you heard me say Dan from Fort Atkinson, one of the folks that was on our talk text line. It's open now. 877-301-3276. Use it, all right?
This is the Midwest Farm Report.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to the Midwest Farm Report on the Civic Media Radio Network. We now take you to a recent episode of the Todd Alba Show, an interview with UW-Madison's Rural EMS Outreach Program Manager, James Small.
So what is the mission of this relatively new program?
Most of my work is done with local government. So our goal of the program is to work on reliability and sustainability of the EMS response system itself. So a lot of that depends on funding from local government. It depends on organizational structure of the systems. We're not doing anything with patient care or system quality at all. There's other excellent training providers to provide that training. But where the gap really existed was to work with these local governments, particularly the small local governments that don't have the resources to help walk them through that process, whether it's how do you increase funding, how do you maybe take your two volunteer ambulances and push them together and create one full-time ambulance and split the cost between the two communities. A lot of those kind of discussions.
What's the biggest challenge for these municipalities? And the second part of that, what's the cause in your opinion?
I'm not sure on the cause. I think that we've seen a decline nationwide in the availability of EMS services, particularly with volunteer services, that there's just a decline in availability of volunteers. I don't think that there's a lack of people wanting to go into it. Our licensing data is pretty consistent going back over a decade that at any given point we have about 18,000 people that have licenses in the state. What we do see is that about 7.5% of them are leaving the field every year and turning in their license. Maintaining a workforce, when you think about that, every 12 years we have to train the equivalent of the entire workforce. Mm-hmm. That's problematic. And then as we've seen the costs increase, that becomes very challenging, I think, particularly for the small municipalities to make that lift and use the tools that are available to create the finances that are necessary to pay for things, because they may be going from a volunteer staff member to a full-time staff member, which is considerably more expensive. And then we also have like hyperinflation in this space, whether it's on capital equipment. Personnel costs are outpacing CPI by 2 to 3-fold going back almost 10 years. Mm-hmm. So, you know, all at once, where a few years ago you might have been hiring a full-timer for $50,000 a year, that position might be 80 or 90 now.
Wow.
So it's gotten really, really expensive really, really fast. You know, when it was a volunteer system in the 80s, when a lot of these systems really came of age, there wasn't 911 yet. Mm-hmm. So the access of the system had a barrier in it, which 911 has erased. Having that capacity to handle these increases too, because if you look at some of these systems, you know, if they formed back in the early 70s, they might have done like a dozen calls that first year. Mm-hmm. That same system might be doing like a couple thousand now.
Really?
And you're trying to do it with the same base that you built it off of these volunteers that came in that wanted to come help the community, and they needed a first aid card and a CPR card because there wasn't even EMS licensing yet. For now, it's a couple hundred hours of training to get in the door.
To subscribe and find all of Civic Media's podcast library, head over to civicmedia.us/shows.
News from the Center, WRCE.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. Hurricane Melissa getting ready to pummel Jamaica as a Category 5 storm. It's expected to be the strongest ever to hit the island, directing. Toby Lindley-Smith is a British tourist who can't leave.
People are sort of staying calm, but obviously there's an undercurrent of panic. We, as Brits, aren't really used to this kind of thing.
Yeah, we're all a bit nervous, but the hotel is doing everything they can.
The storm is packing 175-mile-an-hour winds and is expected to make landfall sometime today. About 42 million Americans are poised to lose their food assistance benefits this weekend because of the government shutdown. Food pantries are popping up at airports for struggling federal workers who are still on the job, despite not getting paid. This is day 28 of the shutdown. 18 innings is what it took for the LA Dodgers to finally take care of the Toronto Blue Jays in the World Series, the marathon lasting 6 hours and 39 minutes, ending when Freddie Freeman homered at the bottom of the 18th. This is ABC News.
It's the Bucks and the Knicks. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with Sports NBA. The Bucks host the New York Knicks. Milwaukee coming off a disappointing loss in Cleveland, 118-113 to fall to 2-1. Bucks center Miles Turner.
Being new to this group, you know, my key messaging to everybody was like, you got to look forward, you know, to playing from behind. You know, it's the NBA, stuff's gonna happen. At times you can find yourself in unfortunate positions, but I just think it's very important that, you know, if we want to be, you know, a playoff caliber team or a championship caliber team, we gotta, you know, really embrace, you know, being down. And I think we did a good job of that in that third quarter. And there's no excuses in this league. You know, it doesn't matter who's out there, you know, we all lace them up and try to go out there and compete.
Baseball, Game 4 of the World Series tonight in Los Angeles. The Dodgers leading the series 2-1 over the Blue Jays after winning last night 6-5. The game went past midnight. The Dodgers' Freddie Freeman with a walk-off home run in the bottom of the 18th inning to win the game with Sports on Mike Clemens.
T. Schwaba. On the next Nightlight, I welcome director of Now More Yes, Max Hay. Then Madison-based film critic Rob Thomas and I talk new movies. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with T. Schwaba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
Catch Farm Report updates throughout the day from the Midwest Farm Report. Right here on 107.7 WRCE.
It is going to be mostly cloudy today. Our high right around 59 this afternoon with wind out of the east at around 5 to 15. Tonight, scattered showers likely. Our low in the upper 30s to low 40s. Tomorrow will be mostly sunny with a high of 57. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Temperature now 38.
I'm Sawyer.
And I'm Shannon.
Together, we're Twin Stunts, the only twin motorcycle freestyle show in the world.
Born and raised in Wisconsin, so we want all our fellow cheeseheads to know that even though we clutch it up, hit 12, and drift in our show, we would never do it on the open road. And there's another thing we would never do on the road. Drive drunk, drive sober, or get pulled over. Together, we can save lives. Learn more at ZeroInWisconsin.gov. Wisconsin DOT.
Nobody had to tell your grandparents not to drive while using their typewriters. Why should it be any different for us kids and our cell phones? Distracted driving was the cause of more than 3,000 deaths in 2022. Come on, we're smarter than this. Let's put down the phones and focus on the roads. Drive safe, everybody.
Don't drive distracted. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
You're listening to the Midwest Farm Report on the Civic Media Radio Network. We now take you to a recent Darren Von Ruden appearance on Matt and Air on Air.
How are our dairy farmers doing?
So Dad Cap's latest numbers showed that we're down to just a little bit over 5,200 dairy farms. Back in 1986, when I graduated from high school, we had 44,800 and something dairy farms in the state of Wisconsin. And so today, now with that information coming out, we've dropped a lot faster than I thought we would. Back in the late 90s, I did some work on dairy pricing reform and tried to get a system in that would hopefully keep more smaller farms in business, and have not succeeded in that yet. And so, you know, we're looking at that number, you know, continuing to dwindle. So next year, by the time my 40-year graduation date is, I'm pretty sure we're going to be under 5,000 dairy farms in the state of Wisconsin, because we're still losing one and a half a day. Since 2020, we've lost 25% of the dairy farms here in the state. And, you know, that just, it's disheartening. Really, it should be looking at a national security issue for a couple different reasons. Number one, because diversity is always the best way to have a food system. If you get too congregated, it really puts the whole system at stake. And, you know, number two, we just have to make sure that we have a high quality workforce, we're losing those generations of high quality workers.
I guess the question, and something we always talk about, Darren, on the show, whether it's with you or with other farmers or just in general when we're discussing this topic, is the government's role in working with the farmers and the farming industry. What is, in your mind, and I don't even want to say a perfect world, but what does the government do in your version that helps sustain the amount of farmers, grow them, or at least take care of them to the place where they're not having to worry every single day about shutting down? What do you want to see from the government as far as partnership? What do they need to do?
So number one thing is make sure that there's a fair marketplace. Looking at what's going on across the country with the very uncompetitive markets that we see, because we can't sell our products into a market that's not being manipulated by big business at this point. It's been that way for decades already. It's just getting worse because we have less players there. Number two, making sure that farmers get a cost production for the products that they produce so that they can stay in business and that, you know, new farmers can actually come into the business too. Or number three, stop handing out government checks to the largest farms at prices at an amount that's way above what should be.
To subscribe and find all of Civic Media's podcast library, head over to civicmedia.us/shows.
This is News from the Center, WRCE.
92. Lots of happy birthdays for you today. Happy birthday to Caitlyn Jenner, formerly Bruce Jenner, 76 today. Julia Roberts is an effervescent 58. Joaquin Phoenix celebrating his 51st birthday. And Bill Gates turned 70 years young today. And now you know. Time again to catch up with our friends from the Steffes Group, STEFFES Group.com. And of course, you want to talk to folks. They have got a full staff of experts ready to visit with you. No matter what you're thinking about as far as an auction is concerned, they've got somebody on staff that can help you through it. 800-726-8609. Again, 800-726-8609. Ashley Hewen along with us from the Steffes Group. You know, Ashley, you and I talk all the time about business coming up and catalogs and so forth, your staff, but we've never really talked about how the Steffes Group got started. You've been around for a long time, very well-respected company, but maybe explain for us how the Steffes Group actually got started.
Sure. Well, it all started with Bob Steffes himself in Arthur, North Dakota. Started an auction company in 1960. Over the years, he became a national livestock auctioneer champion. So well-respected in the industry. Our company is very active in all the associations and stuff like that. And now his son Scott is president. And I started here in Litchfield in the company. We were an acquisition. That was in 2006, and, you know, still a family-owned company. It still is today. But I remember as being one of five employees at the time that wasn't family, and now we've grown into 150 employees.
So as somebody that was in the business before you were acquired, did you know about the Steffes Group before they came in the doorway?
Yeah, we did, but completely different. We were more in the dealer wholesale, and, you know, now we're dealing directly with farmers and helping people every day and really focused on a good client and buyer experience.
You know, and I'm telling you, whether it was Bob or whether it's been Scott, the pivot to being customer friendly and very focused on innovation with technology, somebody planted that seed pretty early on at the Steffes Group.
Yeah, we really did. And we've had online bidding all the way back to the early 2000s, and of course that's completely changed, and we always want to be on the forefront of that, and that's why in 2008 we developed our own online platform. So, you know, a lot of other auction companies, there's some third-party stuff that they use out there, but it's never as good as when you can control it yourself, and when you want to make something better, you just do it on your own. We have a full staff of tech at our support office in West Fargo, and them guys work hard at what they do. And the neat part about it is when you're on a Steffes auction and you call the tech line, that's one of our employees. And
West Fargo that you're talking to.
Yeah, that's one big piece that I think people overlook. Everybody that works for the Steffes Group is on the payroll. It's not by commission. It's not independent contractors. You guys are all together, so you keep consistency on service especially.
Yeah, that's right, you know, and we don't want to be beholden to some third party where nobody can get a hold of something or nobody knows where that bid came in. This is all Steffes throughout the process.
Well, and the other thing we've heard time and time again is how it's almost a religion with you guys to make sure whatever you're advertising, whatever you're promoting has been verified and thoroughly checked by your staff and additional experts.
Yeah, and along with us, you get to talk right to the owner of the equipment, too. And, you know, if it's a retirement, they can tell you when they bought it, what they used it for, and a complete history. There are times when we don't have that, and we'll tell you. But we take a lot of pride in our descriptions, that's for sure.
Yeah, and don't take any of that for granted, folks. If you've ever had much dealings with auction companies, sometimes they don't want you to have access to the buyers. They claim it's privacy and stuff like that. Sometimes they just don't want you to try to get a better edge. Steffes Group is completely transparent when it comes to the way they're doing business and the information they're providing. Just a little historical perspective in case you've wondered. The Steffes Group, like we said, long time with us here on the Farm Report and obviously a long time in the auction business. Ashley Hewen along with us. Don't forget, you can find out more on what's happening with auctions today, right now, steffesgroup.com, steffesgroup.com. Want to talk to them and verify what Ashley just said? You go ahead, pick up that phone, call them, 800-726-8609. That's 800-726-8609. Ashley Hewen along with us from the Steffes Group.
At Channel, we always show up for our farmers.
Is that tar spot or rust?
Incoming!
Definitely rust.
Rick, how did you...
Dropping in to check on your crop, Bill. Let's call your agronomist before that rust can hurt your yield. That sounds great, but when did you learn to skydive? Self-taught, Bill. Kind of a prodigy.
From personalized insights to year-round support, Channel Seed Pros always show up. Visit channel.com to learn more. Channel, all in, all season. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Oh, yeah! Here we go.
Did you just plant Pioneer Brand Z-Series soybeans again?
You bet your next level genetics I did. After last year's huge yields, why wouldn't I want to maximize that Z-Series momentum?
Right. How could I forget about that performance? It totally beat our expectations. Let's unleash some Z-Series on those acres. Come on!
Now you're talking. With that kind of ROI, why would we plant anything else?
Plant Z-Series soybeans in the 100th season of Pioneer. Visit pioneer.com/greatest yields.
Hang on for a minute. John Heinberg, Market Advisor with Total Farm Marketing on West Bend, going to be joining us live on a Tuesday morning here on the Midwest Farm Report to give us an update on how the markets are reflecting on some of the trade deals done over the weekend and the potential trade deals between the United States and China. That's on the way. Did you know USDA data shows nearly 70% of crop workers from 2020 to 2022 were foreign-born here in the United States, and the number of seasonal H-2A visa workers has increased more than sevenfold since 2005. That points to how desperate production agriculture and agribusiness food production is on foreign-born labor. So they have launched a national coalition of U.S. farmers to advocate for immigration reform. They call it Grow It Here. And one of our Wisconsin dairy operators is involved, John Rosenau, his name. He dairies in Cochran Fountain City, the Wamandee Valley in western Wisconsin. And he says without those foreign-born workers, his dairy doesn't work.
The dairy industry has been asking Congress and asking the federal government for years to modernize the immigration system because dairy is specifically excluded from having H-2A employees. And so we rely on immigrants. And right now in Wisconsin, about 90% of the milk that's harvested every day from the cows that are here in the dairy, Wisconsin, or in America's Dairyland, is harvested by immigrants. Without these immigrants, we would struggle. Well, we wouldn't exist, basically, and we wouldn't want to exist either.
John Rosenau from Cochrane Fountain City in western Wisconsin, one of the dairy voices on this new national coalition calling itself Grow It Here, trying to draw attention to the devastating effect that no work on reforming immigration policies would have on production agriculture. Like he said, the existing H-2A visa program that allows for seasonal workers does not apply to dairy. Well, markets in overnight electronic trade this morning still holding fairly firm, and that includes dairy. Yesterday in Chicago, the barrel cheese was up 2.5, 179.5. 40-pound block cheese gained 2.25 at 180. Double A butter, that dropped 0.25 cent to 160 a pound. This morning, the November Class 3 milk that goes into cheese is up a penny at 17.90. December's up 2 at 17.38. Currently, December corn is up 3 at 4.32. March corn up 3 at 4.47. November soybeans are up 12 at 10.79. January up 12 at 10.97. July wheat currently 4 cents higher at 5.68 a bushel. Is that strength in the marketplace because of the trade deals announced over the weekend with places like Malaysia, Cambodia, Vietnam? Or is there something more lurking out there? We'll find out about it next with John Heinberg joining us from Total Farm Marketing. Stick around.
Can't get enough farm news? The stories you hear and more 24/7 at MidwestFarmReport.com. Stay tuned as we'll be right back.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. The Trump Department of Justice announced October 24th it would deploy election monitors at 5 California counties on November 4th. DOJ says it is to ensure transparency and ballot security, but most of the counties are heavily Latino, competitive, or lean liberal, and the Proposition 50 redistricting question is on the ballot. In a statement, U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi said, "We will commit the resources necessary to ensure the American people get the fair, free, and transparent elections they deserve." Proposition 50 would suspend California's Independent Redistricting Commission until 2030, allowing the legislature to gerrymander more Democratic congressional seats, countering 5 Texas seats gerrymandered at President Trump's request. Kern, Riverside, Fresno, Orange, and Los Angeles counties were targeted, largely blue or toss-up counties. CalMatters reports that Fresno, Kern, and Riverside counties are majority Latino. A poll shows 54% of Latinos support Proposition 50. Governor Gavin Newsom had warned that the Trump administration might deploy ICE agents at the polls, a charge the administration denies. Quoted in CalMatters, Christian Arana of the Latino Community Foundation said, "These are citizens of this country, and if they are concerned about immigration or any type of federal presence at in-person voting sites, that is alarming." We have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Listen to the Civic Media exclusive podcast, Busted Pencils.
I mean, that comes naturally for me, Jacob, as a blue-collar scholar. I really love knowing, hey, what are the skills I need to complete the job? And how can I be the very best? I really think that we owe it to the next generation. And I don't even mean just young people, but anybody thinking about, hey, I'm going to change my career pathway. I think we owe it to them to say, well, here are the experts in your industry.
Subscribe to Busted Pencils wherever you listen to podcasts.
News from the Center, WRCE. Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody. If you're like me, you're an analog person living in a digital age. Join us next time. We'll talk about what skills will keep you employed in the age of AI and data centers. Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4. This is News from the Center, WRCE.
Open whenever you can use it, 877-301-FARM. That's 877-301-3276. On a Tuesday morning, we're joined by our friend John Heinberg, market advisor with Total Farm Marketing out of West Bend. Remember their website, totalfarmmarketing.com. And if you want to talk to John, you're always welcome, 800-334-9779. So a lot of conversation, or at least leading into conversations about trade negotiations over the weekend, John. I know everybody's kind of got their ears perked for agreement between the United States and China as it relates to agriculture trade. But I'd rather focus right now on some of the other Southeast Asia trade arrangements that were moved forward. Cambodia, Malaysia, Vietnam, to name just a few. Those are not insignificant movements, and the market's paying attention, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And that's something, too, that's the sidelight of this thing is the actual completion of those trade deals or getting more frameworks done and kind of locking in at least Southeast Asia as a trading partner here for multiple things beyond just the agricultural side of it. So that's encouraging to see. Again, maybe that just continues a good stream of flow in terms of agricultural products. A lot of those areas do like a lot, purchase a lot of soybean meal and corn and things of that nature from us as well. Not to mention even to just the pork products, beef products, things like that. So that's the other side that's kind of forgotten in this. Obviously, the elephant in the room is China and in terms of getting that deal secured. But again, there's just like at least a nice groove here in terms of getting some things put together while he's on that trip down to that region. You know, the market's just like that in general. We've seen the movement in the equity markets. We're seeing the movement in the grain side of the equation. You know, just the optimism that we're going to continue to see decent demand. We already have great corn demand right now at this time frame. So again, just anything that just kind of starts showing that, you know, hey, what we've been going through maybe is getting some resolution in those, and we can get those trade partners working full speed again.
You know, we had talked so much about China and, like you said, the gorilla in the room. Do we have a sense of tempo? I thought they were going to meet this week. Now it sounds like some of the behind the doors conversations that have already taken place made the physical meeting between Trump and the president of China unnecessary. What's the latest on that this morning?
You know, again, it just still continues to be somewhat quiet overall in terms of what the details are of this quote unquote framework, you know, and that's the buzzword in this thing. It's just still framework. There's not a finalized deal there. There's still a lot of little pieces that are coming together, but it still sounds like it's going to be that way. You know, obviously the market's been so focused on soybeans in terms of the news media and the negative push against on the soybean side of it because of the tariffs, a lack of sales. But, you know, this trade deal there does open up a whole bunch of other things. That's why the wheat market's taken off a little bit. China was already rumored to be thinking about some wheat due to some heavy wetness conditions in their winter wheat planting areas that they, you know, may be looking for supplies there. And you got other grains that they purchase at usually pretty good levels, the sorghum side of the equation. And then obviously they haven't bought corn for a while, so it'd be nice to see if they could step into that market. So again, the grain markets are pretty excited about this. Well, you know, obviously now we need to see if there's some sales that come together and actually confirm that we got their Chinese business back in our hands.
John Heinberg joining us live on the Midwest Farm Report. He, of course, is on staff with Total Farm Marketing. You can see their website, totalfarmmarketing.com, 800-334-9779. Another conversation topic that remains in the marketplace, John. President Trump saying that he wants to bring in Argentinian beef. You had mentioned last week that's not as easy as his solution to high egg prices, importing eggs on the short term. Beef much more complex when it comes to bringing that in from Argentina. Has that advanced at all? It's still got the market's attention.
Yeah, it still does. And actually, we're still watching some other developments that might be happening as President Trump is meeting with the president of Brazil as well while he's on this trip. Do we get that 50% tariff off the Brazilian products too and allow Brazilian beef back into the United States as well? The biggest thing, though, is you still got to look at the big picture. Just importing beef isn't going to really change anything other than bringing a lower end cut in that probably helps out in the ground beef trade and the trim trade. The side of the equation, you know, that's going to benefit, you know, the lower end restaurants, the McDonald's, the Burger King's, things of that nature, as well as the ground beef price for the, you know, for the consumer that's looking for that product. You know, when it still comes down to what drives price in terms of the beef market, it still comes down to the main cuts, the rib, you know, the round, those areas of rib, obviously, and the being the most valuable cut. We've seen a nice move in retail prices. We're about $12 higher now in the last handful of days on carcasses because we're getting close to the Christmas beef rib season, and that's driving the value of the carcass. Now, we aren't bringing any more cattle in, so that's the other side that's not going to move very quickly here is just in terms of the tight supply overall for cattle on the hoof here in the United States. You know, this reaction we've seen, this hard sell-off we've seen in this market, has been basically technical-driven, momentum-driven, but not fundamentally driven. You know, so after the news media kind of puts it back to the back burner a little bit, and it's already starting to happen because of the Chinese trade deal. You don't hear the chatter about it as much as we did just a week and a half ago, that this market will probably find some stability. May not go back to those old highs, but I definitely think we're going to find some stability here somewhere and get back to a, you know, a value type point based on where we are fundamentally.
Have we seen any action on China to counter the possibility of the United States bringing Argentinian beef in, there had been conversation that they might drive up the Argentinian beef price just to stop the U.S.
I haven't seen anything on that. And then again, I think that's one of the reasons why we're looking at Brazil again, too. You know, just looking at the amount of imports that we can bring in just from different sources. You know, the only thing we're really doing in terms of Argentina, we're not giving them a break. We're actually just opening up the quota system. We have a quota where we can bring in 20,000 metric tons of beef before a tariff kicks in. It's a 25 or 26% tariff that kicks in that Argentina beef. He's moving that quota up to basically 80,000 metric tons, which, you know, we're already almost halfway there in terms of our inputs already from Argentina. You know, so those are the things that are really happening. It's not like we're just buying massive amounts of beef in. We're just letting the market do its job by opening up the quota, just keeping that beef a little bit cheaper to the U.S. packers and retailers.
John Heinberg, market advisor with Total Farm Marketing here on the Midwest Farm Report. And we're still suffering with information vacuum, John, huh?
Yeah, we still are. And that's still some of the big thing. There could be things going on behind the scenes right now that we don't know about in terms of the export sales. You know, China may have been in the market for a couple of weeks now. We have no idea just because of the blackout of information due to the shutdown.
And that is not a good thing. No World Ag Supply Demand Report, it looks like, either.
Yeah, it sounds like that November report's going to go to the wayside as well. And we kind of need that information as we're wrapping up harvest.
Yeah, that's right. Critically important at this time of the year. Good enough, my friend. Appreciate you joining us. Take care, John.
Thank you. Have a great day.
John Heinberg, live with us here on the Midwest Farm Report. TotalFarmMarketing.com, his website, their company website, I should say, 800-334-9779. The phone number, if you want to talk to John and try to get your risk management strategy in place, because these headlines are definitely driving the trade with the government still shut down. Catch up with you tomorrow morning.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
I'm Rick Smith, host of The Rick Smith Show. If you're looking for honest talk, real stories, and straight-up news that matters to you, tune in to The Rick Smith Show. We're digging into the issues that affect your job, your family, your future. Join me weeknights at 9 on the Civic Media Radio Network, because your voice deserves to be heard. That's The Rick Smith Show, heard weeknights at 9 right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
More blue state backlash over the Trump tariffs effect on agriculture today on Farm to Fork. As you've probably heard by now, the 12 agricultural safety and health centers around the country did receive a renewal of their federal funding support and will not be shutting down. Many of those centers had projects in progress, and those will now be able to continue. Also continuing the Ag Safety and Health Campaign on Farm to Fork. To learn how you can assist with that, visit the homepage at NorthshoreProductions.com. Farmers are used to handling crop protection chemicals, livestock insecticides, and medications on a regular basis. Each product has information on safe handling. Make sure you and everyone else using these products knows and follows the directions for proper handling. Farm safety and health is everyone's business. This reminder is brought to you by Farm to Fork through the generous support of listeners like you across the country. Learn how you can help at NorthshoreProductions.com. The Minnesota state auditor echoes comments made by her counterpart in Colorado in yesterday's show concerning the impact on agriculture of the president's new tariff policies. Julia Blaha.
Our agricultural market's about $26 billion total. Now, our exports are about $10 billion. So we're one of the top four export states. So you can imagine the tariff effect that it has on us. Our top markets, China, Mexico, and Canada, are definitely reeling from impacts of tariffs. And so all of this together is a lot of stress, and we're really starting to see those stresses hit numbers really close to home.
Blaha says cases of farmers requesting farm loan mediations have tripled in August from the same month last year. Also not a fan of President Trump's tariff actions is Gary Wordish, president of the Minnesota Farmers Union.
We're losing our trust as a reliable trading partner around the world. In the first administration, they made what is called a market facilitation payment to the farmers of approximately $28 billion. that did not make the farmers whole. And now they're talking about, you know, maybe 10 to 12 billion. That doesn't make the farmers whole at all. Farmers don't want aid, they want trade.
That's Farm to Fork. I'm Daryl Anderson.
Maggie Dawn.
At 5 o'clock, I talk with Chicago attorney Robert Held, who is among the protesters who were detained for protesting outside the ICE facility in Broadview. We discuss his 8 hours in custody.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
It's the Eco Minute, powered by Clean Wisconsin, your environmental voice since 1970. I'm Amy Berrio. Businesses across the state counting on $1.5 billion in federal funding are finding out it's not coming. The money had been approved to help pay for energy-saving projects, solar and wind development, technology innovation, and more. The Department of Energy is now reportedly canceling those awards. One group that is getting a boost in federal funding, AI data center developers. The new federal budget lets tech companies claim more upfront tax breaks on data center equipment, facilities, and production lines, and it appears to be working. Microsoft recently announced what it calls the world's most powerful AI data center planned for Mount Pleasant. But environmental groups warn unfettered AI development could cause lasting harm to our natural resources. Knowledge is power. For a deep dive into Wisconsin's most pressing environmental issues, check out my Defender podcast at cleanwisconsin.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. Hurricane Melissa is currently a Category 5 storm and headed straight for Jamaica, where it could be the strongest hurricane on record for the island. Earl Cameron lives there and is warning that the effects could be catastrophic.
This is not a joke. It is very serious, guys, and it is going to be something different. The figures we think will be astronomical.
The storm expected to make landfall sometime today. President Trump at the ambassador's residence in Japan as his Asian trip continues. On Thursday, he will attend the summit in South Korea, at which he will discuss trade with China's Xi Jinping. This is day 28 of the federal government shutdown. Food assistance benefits for about 42 million Americans are set to expire at the beginning of the month, which is Saturday. In Los Angeles last night, it took 6 hours and 39 minutes, 18 innings in all, for the Dodgers to now lead the World Series 2-1 over the Toronto Blue Jays. No rest. Game 4 is tonight. This is ABC News.